afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and the political events. Today is Friday, May 19th, 2017. Good afternoon, Alfred.
Good afternoon, Melody.
Oh, you know, I love my job, but there's just some Fridays where I am thankful it is Friday, and I'll still be working tomorrow, but I'm still thankful it's Friday today. It's been a very up and down week with the markets and with gold. You know, the Dow dropping, you know, 400 points, gold up $24. We had a reversal, so it's been a very roller coaster of a ride. You have everything coming out of Washington, it seemed like it quieted down a little bit today, and we had a nice positive day for gold today, up $790 in the New York spot aftermarket at $12.5570. Silver's up 27 cents at $16.93. Platinum was up 7 at 943, and we have palladium down 3 at $762. Excuse me. We have the USDX, it was down 0.77 at 97.14. Big drop in the dollar. Crude oil was up almost a full point, full dollar. It's up 0.97 at 50.32. And the paper markets today enjoyed another comeback. The Dow was up 140 points, 20,803. The NASDAQ was up 28 at 6,083. The S&P is up 15 at 2381. The 10-year yield, 2.24%. And, of course, the euro enjoyed the increase against the dollar, is up 0.89. at 112. European markets and Asian markets were pretty much flat overnight. There was a little upside ticks, but nothing to truly write home about and to get too excited about. But
nobody writes home anymore, Melody. We email
home. We text.
Nothing to email home about.
We don't even
step up into the 21st century, Melody.
We don't email anymore. We text.
Well, some
text
of us
has overtaken emailing.
Right. Yeah, so, I stand corrected.
You know, the things that are going on in the news, there's a few things, of course, the mainstream media, they can't get enough of the investigation and so forth. They don't know how to move on. And certainly the same way with the Democrats. It's like, just move on. There's more important things to be talking about. But Mr. Trump, First Lady Melania, Chief of Staff, Reince Priebus, Jared Kushner, and daughter Ivanka, they left the White House today just before 2 p.m. Eastern, and they are going to make their way to Saudi Arabia. They are on their first leg of a 9-day trip. Trump is going to visit Israel, Rome, Vatican City, Belgium, and Sicily before he returns. He is going to, the trip includes stops honoring Islam, Christianity. He's going to attend the NATO and G7 summits. You'd think that would be more in the news, but he said Friday. Pardon?
Do you think Trump is just making a run for it and getting out of? I mean, if he disappears out of Washington D.C., will it be harder for the media to attack him?
No, because the NATO and G7 meetings were, they've been in the works for a while. Same way with his trip to Israel and so forth. I just can't understand the entourage that he's taking along. The amount of people.
How many?
1,000, I believe I read.
1,000?
1,000.
That's probably more than Michelle Obama took on her excursions.
Now, it could be alternative news. It could be fake news, but that's what I was reading about. I saw that this morning on the Drudge, because supposedly he's staying there, and I'd like to think it's not true, because I'll tell you what, if it is true, It's shocking. It's just shocking. I mean, talking about all kinds of security and everything that he's taking along, and that was along with the you know, 1,000 people that he's taking along. But hey, you have to protect him, his daughter, her husband. I mean, there's a lot of people that they need to protect, and he's certainly going in areas that where he might need some protecting. But we'll see.
Probably not any more than he needs in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, probably. Probably. So we'll just have to see how it, you know, hopefully he does some good, but he's certainly going to spend, we'll see what comes out of it. But it's a 9-day trip. That's quite lengthy, I think, for,
It's because they've got big sand traps on the golf courses in Saudi Arabia.
Is that
it takes
it?
You a while to blast out of the sand traps because they're miles and miles long.
Well, maybe it's just the opposite. Maybe you actually golf in the sand and you have little grass traps.
It's possible. They'd be small, though.
They would be. But anyway, so there was another interesting item I wanted to discuss, if I could find it here. Things are heating up a little bit in Syria. I believe there was... U.S. attacks pro-Assad forces in southern Syria. I believe, I don't know if that was yesterday. There was some attacks yesterday, today. Not sure it was yesterday. You had U.S. warplanes attacked a vehicle convoy in what they were describing as a de-escalation zone. A number of questions are unclear as the U.S. is identifying the targets as Assad forces or regime vehicles. But some media reports identify them as simply Shiite militias. So it's the whole report on what was going on and so forth is a little bit of confusing. U.S. officials also appear confused about the timing of the attack, claiming they warned Russia that the convoy was inside the safe zone and gave Russia time to get tried to get in contact with them, while other officials presenting the warning. So again, are these officials just so, it's just so much lack of communication, or is this part of the, you know, mainstream media, and you know, to make the situation seem a bit confusing? So it's probably somewhere in the middle. It's probably a little bit.
You know, you would think with all the modern communication equipment, and you're tangled up in a war or something, a police action or whatever this is, you would suppose that they ought to be able to communicate reliably. I mean, this is the sort of thing, if there's any place on Earth that you want to be able to communicate reliably, it's in the midst of some sort of a police action or war. Now, I know war, you can knock things out and things don't work, but I get the impression, you know, we've got satellites and the rest of that.
You think.
How can you mess up on communicating to Russia, for example, that something's going to happen? You better get your troops out of harm's way. How is that possible? I mean, that sounds like an incredible human error to me. I don't think it's technology. I think that's human error. Somebody just either communicated the message too late or to the wrong people, or somebody didn't understand when they received it. I don't know what happened there, but just, it's surprising. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be possible.
No.
Just shouldn't
so
be.
So again, you know, and you're right, a human error or just incompetence. You just don't know. And but interesting, but again, with gold being up, you know, what we saw today, perhaps that had something a little bit to do with it. I have a couple of little TransUnion, and I find this surprising. TransUnion, the credit company, Americans will stop paying mortgages before car payments and other loans. Many Americans facing a financial crisis have a decision to make which debts they will pay and which they will skip. When faced with that decision, consumers tend to prioritize unsecured personal loans ahead of other debts such as credit cards, auto loans, and even mortgages. And it really is interesting that people would dump their mortgage prior to, you know, credit card loans and things like that. car loans. I mean, don't they need a roof over the head? Now, I get with a home, your mortgage, you got a lot of other expenses that come with than just paying that mortgage. You know, you got all the upkeep and repairs, the things that things might happen, insurance and so forth. So overall, that nut is much, much bigger. And I guess maybe it's easier to walk away from that and you can go and, you know, go rent in an apartment, and all of a sudden, you know, you're able now to pay your auto loans, your credit card debts and so forth. So I guess if you view it that way, it kind of makes sense. But just goes to show that, you know, people get into these homes, you know, with these low rates. People don't, you know, I don't know if it's getting easier to qualify for homes. We know Wells Fargo made some mortgages available to people where you only had to have a 650 credit score. Which is low to be purchasing homes. So I just found that
they may be exactly the kind of people who are willing to let the home go. Yeah. You know, the story that you're talking about is you're describing people who are indebted for a number of different things. They've got the house, they've got the car, and they've got the credit cards and unsecured and whatever they've got. They've got a number of things, and they know they're in trouble. So what are you going to do in the midst of serious trouble? And it may be that you're already prepared in your mind that you're going to probably lose the house. And if you're in big trouble, maybe that's the one item, if you could just get out from under the house payment for a while, maybe that's the one item that might save you, where the other ones are relatively small, are comparatively small, and they won't really cure the problem. Maybe they're just in so deep, you get rid of the most, you know,
the biggest,
the heaviest
one,
item you're carrying on your airplane, push it out the door.
Yeah. But it was a little surprising because, you know, first you would think it'd be the credit cards because you want that roof over your head. But, you know, anyway, I thought that was interesting. The U.S. retail industry employs some 16 million Americans, a full 10% of the country's working population. And contrary to popular belief, 71% are full-time employees. And I've said this too, look how many thousands of people that are going to be canned through the retail industry, and we haven't even seen it hit the economy as yet. This report is saying with the new automation, it could replace 6 million to 7.5 million of those jobs.
Retail jobs.
Threatening to reduce total U.S. retail worker numbers to less than the total number of jobs in the country's manufacturing sector. Hardest hit will be cashiers, of whom 73% are women. This information was released yesterday in a new report from the Investor Responsibility Research Group Institute. It was conducted by Cornerstone Capital Group. And so that is a lot of jobs. Growth in e-commerce, which now accounts for 8% of all U.S. retail sales. Of course, Amazon.com accounts for 43% of all those sales. That's quite a big chunk. But I did. That's a lot of people. 6 to 7.5 million retail jobs to be lost.
Did they give you any time frame?
No time frame.
I mean, some of them make those predictions by the year. There's one article I was reading today. They're predicting things that are going to happen by 2050, and it just makes me laugh. I don't think anyone can make accurate predictions of what's going to happen 2020, let alone 2050. And the idea that we're going to have serious problems by 2050. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about 2050. I mean, many people right now are so stressed and in their own way so anxious. What's going to happen in the next 6, 12, 24 months? If you can give us that much of a time frame or that much of a lead where we can say, okay, this is what's going to happen, gives us a chance to be prepared. Who's preparing for 2050?
Well, we've seen that there's been a lot already just the end of last year, the beginning of this year, thousands and thousands, 30, 50,000. And I would think at the speed in which this is sort of happening, I think you'd be seeing this amount of people, I'd say, within the next year.
Two tops.
And even if they're wrong by 50%, you're still looking at a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. 3-4 million.
Yeah. In a very short period amount of time.
That's the problem with this. You know, in previous, we had the Industrial Revolution.
Multiply that times three.
What do you mean, multiply what times three?
you have the multiplier effect. For every one job lost, it counts up to three jobs, because you have restaurants that no longer get people coming in and eating. You get, you know.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. If you take 6 million retail workers out of the economy, you're going to cause another X number of people to no longer have jobs, and they won't be going out for dinner, which means the restaurants are going to take a beating. No telling how far this goes, but.
So when you have that type of a huge number, it's going to have a major impact. So, and again, even if it's 50% correct, still a lot of people times three. So,
you know, again, from my perspective, in the past, we had the Industrial Revolution, which took place over a period of something like 60 or 70 years. And if I recall correctly, from something like 1870 up until 1930, somewhere in that, for what we called the Industrial Revolution. And I might have the years wrong on it, but again, 60, 70 years for what passed for the Industrial Revolution. There were some instabilities and disconnects, and people were losing jobs. There was a problem, but it took place over the course of two or three generations. It was a revolution, but it moved slow enough where it did not cause enormous trauma. But what we're seeing right now with the robots and the artificial intelligence, this is happening right now, and it's happening at a rate where if you're going to college to get a degree in something, that degree may be worthless by the time you get to your sophomore year. 2 years, and you may be, that's gone. By the time you get to 4 years, you could have changed your major, you get to 4 years, and that could be gone. It is not necessarily the magnitude of this next artificial intelligence revolution that's going to cause us so much harm. It's the velocity. It's happening so fast that it's very difficult for people to prepare for this. I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Let me get to this real quick. We might have to extend it to the next 20 minutes after the break, but we've heard of the report about it. People didn't have $1,000 for an emergency. Here's a new survey from Bloomberg and New America, which looks, among other things, at the ability to cope with financial surprises. The question was, if you opened your mailbox today and found that you owed the city $100 and you had to pay it right away, could you? A new report claims that nearly half of us are not prepared to absorb this cost. This is $100.
$100.
And more than one in four Americans is up a creek if they have to unexpectedly pay as little as $10. It's like, are you kidding me?
You know, a $100 bill today is equivalent to a $5 bill when I was a kid in terms of purchasing power. And it's almost incomprehensible. My dad, my grandfather, that they could have been incapable of coming up with $5 or $10. Let's take a break. A couple commercials. Be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Bethann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Bethann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Adask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188.
I just wanted to finish up with that where people didn't have or not prepared for a $100 emergency. We all heard that, the $1,000 emergency, they wouldn't be able to come up with that. 4 out of 5 survey respondents said they would not be able to afford an unanticipated bill of $1,000, whether it be medical insurance, medical emergency, or whatever. A $100 surprise invoice would put 48% of Americans in a bind, the survey said. And that means something like a parking ticket, a minor auto repair, a broken window would land them in debt, even at $10. 28% of respondents said they would have to worry about not being able to buy food. So, anyway, that's enough of that.
And
so,
what we're talking about, there's another point on this. We are also anticipating that this $20 trillion national debt will be paid by future generations. And I will guarantee you that a lot of the people that Melody was just describing who'd have a hard time coming up with $100 are part of those future generations that we expect to pay off on the American national debt, and they won't. They're not going to pay it. And it won't simply be a choice. Say, no, we refuse to pay, which they might do anyway. Some of them will. They'll just refuse to pay it. But others are just, they won't be able to pay it. They won't have the money. They won't have the resources. There won't be any way to make that happen. And it's another illustration of why it is ill-advised to store your wealth in the form of a paper debt instrument like a U.S. Treasury. Sooner or later, these things are going to go south. And the stories we hear right now, they are, you know, leaves in the breeze that are in anticipation of when somebody says, oh my gosh, we can't pay the payoff on the bonds. And it's going to happen, and they are either going to repudiate them openly, or they are going to cause inflation and or hyperinflation to repudiate those bonds in a way that is a little more stealthy. Can't be paid, won't be paid, bet on it. And if you're sensible, in my opinion, you're going to get out of paper debt instruments as quickly as you can. Put your wealth into something tangible that will withstand the stress that's headed our way.
And, you know, I just saw there was I guess it was either Fannie Mae or Freddie. I don't know if this has been proved, or at least it's being considered, to where you can roll your student loan into your mortgage. So once you have, you have a student loan that's basically unsecured, now you're rolling it into a secured mortgage. And I mean, it's just like, again, these are just signs that people just don't have any money. I mean,
that's part of it.
Yeah.
But whose idea is it to roll these two debts together?
Well, I said it was either. I think they're just considering it. But yeah, Fannie, government.
No, I understand. Sure. My guess is that they're going to say, "Look, kid, you're going to have to pay off on your student loan, or we'll take your house."
Or we'll take your house, exactly.
They need some coercion to get these kids to pay off on their student debts.
That's right, because these kids are ready to walk away from it, and that's over $1 trillion.
Yep.
So, and there was just one more report I saw today where the House Republicans, we all know they passed the American Health Care Act earlier this month, but do you wonder why it's been kind of quiet and, you know, the Senate really hasn't been saying anything about it? Well, it's because the Republicans used the budget reconciliation process to pass the health care bill. It allows them to push legislation through the Senate with a simple majority. But that depends on the bill meeting certain requirements. And one of them is that it reduces the deficit by at least $2 billion over the next decade. Well, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, but anyway, that's, you know, how this is happening. So the trouble is that the Republicans voted on their House bill without waiting for the Congressional Budget Office that evaluates the legislation, and they're supposed to come out with the information next week. So both Bloomberg News and NBC News, and yeah, I know that their credibility, but they have confirmed that House leaders have not formally sent their bill to the Senate on the chance that it fails to meet the deficit requirements. So if the Congressional Budget Office comes out and says, hey, it doesn't meet the deal, the requirements, that means they have to start the process all over again. And
if they want this bare majority to be sufficient to pass the bill.
Yeah, the bill is just being held until the CBO issues its final score. And so they made some changes in it, and nobody says it shouldn't be a problem or anything like that, but there's some issues to where the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget estimates, not an oxymoron, but estimates that 10 million more people purchased insurance under the new version. It would add $300 billion in costs, so therefore it wouldn't fit the requirements, the deficit requirement, and they'd have to start all over. So we'll see
next
week.
Which is another way of saying what?
What?
We're in big trouble.
Yes.
There is no way out of this right now. This is not the kind of problem that can be legislated away. Nobody in Congress or the Senate or the White House is smart enough to deal with this problem in a way that is not going to be explosive and damaging before it's all over. Now, it's not necessarily going to be big trouble this year or next year, but it's going to be big trouble. And if it weren't, this thing would be able to slide right through. It wouldn't be any trouble at all. I mean, to get the bill passed. They are, it's just, they are caught between the rock and the hard place. And we got there because we, the people, you and I, have played the fool. We have allowed Congress to go into debt and debt and debt, but that all by itself was not such a bad thing. The real catastrophe, to my mind, is we allowed them to subject us to a debt-based monetary system. We had an asset-based monetary system that was based on the assets of gold or the asset of silver, and they got rid of that, and it was gone and terminated completely by 1971. And since then, we have had a debt-based monetary system, which is just insane. We treat debt as if it's a form of wealth. It's not. It's not an asset. It's a liability. We treat these debt instruments as if they function the same as capital. And we complain that capitalism is dying. Capitalism isn't dying. Capitalism hasn't failed us. We have failed capitalism. Why? Because I don't think you can have capitalism without capital. I don't believe that these debt-based monetary instruments that we're carrying around in our wallet and that we have in our pension funds in the form of bonds and whatever, I don't believe they can be properly construed as capital. I think capital is something tangible like gold, silver, tools, factories, buildings, land. I think that's capital. And the idea that we treat a debt instrument as if it's capital and then they complain, oh, capitalism wasn't working right. Well, of course it's not. We don't have any capital. We don't use it. At least we don't use it in our financial affairs. We don't use real capital. We use these promises to pay, and that's all these debt-based monetary instruments are. They're not payments. They're just promises to pay. That's what a debt is. It's a promise. And they can't all be kept. It's crazy to treat these things as if they are all guaranteed. All the promises are going to be kept. Bunk. That is not going to happen. And when it begins to break loose, there is going to be heck on earth. It's going to be big, big trouble. What you got, Melody? Do you have anything more?
No, I don't.
Got an article here from the Associated Press talking about the Trump situation to some degree. And the headline is, Chavez will resign, raising doubts about Trump probe. Representative Jason Chavez said Thursday that he will resign from Congress next month, a move that calls into question the future of the House Oversight Committee's investigation of President Donald Trump and his campaign and his campaign's ties with Russia. Comey was fired last week as the FBI investigates whether Trump's presidential campaign associates had colluded with Russia to influence the outcome on his behalf. And that's interesting right there. It says they're investigating to see if Trump's presidential campaign associates had colluded with Russia. Now, I've seen other reports from other seemingly credible sources that admit that there's no evidence that Trump did anything wrong. It might be that someone on Trump's staff, there is evidence that someone on Trump's staff did something wrong. That might be. But it seems unlikely to me, not impossible, but it seems unlikely that Trump is going to be impeached over this mess. Nevertheless, Chavez, a Republican, said in a letter to the media and his constituents that his last day will be June 30th. He said last month that he would not seek re-election in 2018 and that he was considering leaving office early. Now he lets us know he's out of here on June 30th. Congressman quitting the racket, Melody.
Yes.
He's only been elected this time for, he's been there for 6 months. No, not even that, since he was took another oath of office and re-inducted in as a congressman. It's only been, I don't know, really not even 6 months. It's 5 months maybe that he's been in. And he's saying, nope, I'm out of here. He's got, what, 19 months to go? And he's quitting as a congressman? You know, he says that this is because he says
family.
This is for family reasons. He said he's turned 50 in March, and the reality of spending more than 1,500 nights away from my family over 8 years hit me harder than it had before. Chavez said in the letter he wants to spend time with his family, return to the private sector, and possibly run for governor. Well, that may all be true, but it is odd that he's leaving as apparently the head of this oversight committee that was going to investigate Trump. If he leaves, I'm not sure if the committee continues or if it folds up or this is just a convenient excuse for them to fold up. But it's odd. It's another one of those things, you look at it and you wonder, what the heck is going on here? And I don't have an answer for you. I can just say that another oddity, you know, and maybe that's all it is, just a little oddity. Or maybe it's another leaf in the breeze that says some people are saying, I'm getting out of here while the getting's good. What do you think, Melody? Is it getting out while the getting's good?
I don't think so. I don't think that motivates any politician. Very few anyway. I'm sure there's an underlying issue. But it's deeper than that. And, his job is difficult now. I mean, these politicians go into office, think they can go in there, bring in a good wage, you know, get some good health care and so forth. They get how many weeks off in a year? And hey, it's not very difficult. It's not very, they do what they, and then it's pleasant. It's a pleasant position.
It used to be. You just walk around with your hat in hand looking for bribes. Anybody got a bribe for me? You got a political campaign?
I don't believe everyone there is for a bribe. So you can't, you can't prove it yet. But they go there and thinking, it's going to be a breeze. This year, this administration is not going to be a breeze.
No.
And he'd rather be a governor where, he has control over something. I guarantee you he doesn't have control over what he is supposed to be doing. And he's probably finding out that, maybe like Trump has, he doesn't have much control over a lot of things. And,
even Bill Clinton said that when he took office. He said, you spend all your life looking for more political power. And I think he even said, working to try to get elected as president of the United States. I don't remember if he actually said he spent his whole life working to be elected as president of the United States, but working for more power. And then he says, you get here and you find out that somebody else is pulling the strings and you're functioning more or less like a puppet. That has to be a disturbing reality for a lot of people, and I'm sure I'm sure it's got to drive Trump nuts. He's used to just calling the shots, and everybody says, yes, boss, yes, boss. And in government, I don't think they have to say yes.
Yeah, but you know what, Al? You and I know that they're just puppets. So I find it hard to believe that when you go in there that they wouldn't know either. You know?
Well, it's hard to say what they know before they get there. I'm sure they find out what the truth is once they get there. But, I mean, it's a heck of a deal. You can get a pension out of, you can be a congressman one time, I think is all it takes. Just get elected 2 years, and you've got a lifetime pension.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. It might be $170,000 a year.
A year.
I don't remember.
It's amazing, yeah.
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 Plus, I assume medical care and the rest of that sort of thing. I mean, you get elected one time, one time. You don't have to be elected five times or four times or spend 20 years in Congress. One time, 2 years, and your retirement is... Your retirement card is filled. You're good forever. Pretty amazing. And it's hard to imagine that with the perquisites that are there, the privileges that are there, it's just surprising that someone would quit, particularly in the midst of what may be a very important investigation. He's running that investigation, and he says, I'm out of here. I've had enough. I'm going to go see my wife.
Well, you got the FBI, and maybe that power was taken away from him as far as, you know, some of the investigations, because now you have the Mueller that is actually in charge of the investigation, so.
Well, he's in charge of the House, or he's been in charge of the House investigation, is my understanding.
Yeah.
There might be six different investigations going on.
I know. It's crazy. But no, it's deeper than just, you know, I miss my family. Heck, they're only in Washington 6 months out, you know, half the time anyway. So it's not like
they're more than that, to tell you the truth.
What?
I think they're there for more than 6 months. I mean, I wish they were only there for about 2 months. 1 month to goof off and 1 month to accomplish something,
you know,
then send them home. They wouldn't be able to do much harm.
Look how long it took them to do the health care. And it's still sitting
still
there.
Not
you can't
done.
Go to, it's still not
I mean,
done.
Do it.
And
they
it's still
done
not
it
done.
Yet.
So what are they? So what? You know, if they actually worked when they were there, they would only have to be there 4 months out of the year. But anyway, what's next, Al?
Commercials.
Really?
Take a look at the little clock, Melody. It's time for us to take a break. Take a couple more commercials, and then Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Perhaps.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs. Got an article here from CNN Money, and it's entitled The Biggest Lesson Learned, Puerto Rico's Bankruptcy. Puerto Rico is, this is the biggest municipal bankruptcy filing in U.S. history. Puerto Rico's broke. And according to CNN Money, the perils of progressive policies are on full display in Puerto Rico. On the brink of economic collapse, bankruptcy proceedings began Wednesday after Governor Ricardo Rossello filed for Title III bankruptcy protection in the biggest municipal bankruptcy filing in U.S. history. This is what happens when a bloated government is left unchecked. Melody, can you think of any other bloated governments?
Really, Al?
Does any come to mind besides Puerto Rico, or are they the only bloated, unchecked government on the face of the earth?
On the face of the earth, right.
Uh-huh. That's it? They're the only ones?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there were any other bloated bloated governments, irresponsible and so on, that are left unchecked, spend all they want, they would probably wind up like Puerto Rico. That's the implication there. Economic uncertainty has caused the population of the island territory to plummet from more than 5 million people to 3.4 million. They've essentially lost a third of their population. Because, and what did this? They have here, here's an idea of what the out-of-control big government policies, here's an idea of what they are that brought about financial ruin in Puerto Rico. Public employees get 30 vacation days a year. The minimum wage is 77% of the median wage. And bondholders suffer for the benefit of big labor. Puerto Rico's Democratic delegate, Pedro Pierluisi, admitted to Congress that part of this overspending is definitely the result of mismanagement. Well, gee, what a surprise. I was just surprised that he admitted it. But they've mismanaged the economy. And in this instance, it's the Democrats, it's the progressives, it's the people who get control of government and they think they can do anything they want. They can run. Once you're a legislator, you don't get to vote on things. You get to wave a magic wand. And you can make your wand cause things to appear that weren't there before. You can make benefits go to people without worrying about who's going to pay for them. You can just magically reorder the universe all on your own, or at least with the complicity of 150 or so other members of the legislature. Big labor, that's part of their problem. Public employees, bondholders suffer for the benefit of big labor. Puerto Rico's Democratic delegate, yeah, he says it was overspending, was mismanagement. Keep in mind, Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory. And if this debt-fueled nightmare can happen there, it can happen in any state across the country. Ultimately, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico needs economic growth. However, to have access to the credit it needs to rebuild, Puerto Rico needs a comprehensive, common sense, and transparent restructuring and repayment plan that is best achieved through negotiations with creditors. In other words, they're broke. They're not going to be able to pay the debt. But if they can't restructure this debt, which means essentially coerce the creditors and taking less than Puerto Rico agreed to repay, say, here, we're going to give you this, and we want you to accept it, and if it can be restructured and you'll get something. You're not going to get what you expected. You'll get something. All of this restructuring is evidence that Puerto Rico is, in fact, bankrupt. And the best they can do is get people lined up and say, listen, well, I know we owe you $100, but we're going to give you $20 instead because it's all we got. Now, you can either agree to take $20 or you can disagree, and you'll get nothing. What would you like to do? Take your choice. It's a free country. But you're going to take a loss. Creditors are going to take a loss, and they have to agree to this, though. The creditors have to agree to this loss, apparently, in order for Puerto Rico to retain access to credit that it needs to rebuild its economy. Puerto Rico, which is already so deep in debt that it must file for bankruptcy, needs to go deeper into debt. That's what they mean when they say access to credit. They mean access to debt. They have to go deeper into debt to rebuild the island, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico. Does that make any sense to anyone? You're already so much in debt that your economy is going to collapse. And the only way you can save it is by going deeper into debt. Does that make any sense? Is this going to work? Shall we call in some PhDs? Do we need to talk to somebody with IQs of minimum of 200 points to figure out, I wonder if this is going to work or not? And of course, it's not going to work. The article goes on and it says Title III procedures. This is a special bankruptcy proceeding. Title III proceedings could last for years and will delay any chance at economic recovery Puerto Rico might otherwise have. The scale of the crisis is staggering. Puerto Rico has a 45% poverty rate and unemployment more than double the U.S. average. Now, that raises an interesting question. What is the U.S. average unemployment right now, Melody? Is it less than 5%, which is what the government claims, or is it over 20%, which is what John Williams claims at shadowstats.com?
Well, what we do know is it's certainly higher than what the government reports.
Well, that's in here. This unemployment more than double the U.S. average. Mm-hmm. Well, I'd just like to know, what is the U.S. average? I'd like to have that. Someone sent it to me in terms that I could say, okay, this is what it is. All right. The island territory has a total indebtedness of $74 billion in bond debt and $49 billion in unfunded pension obligations. And you know what that means? The pension obligations are unfunded. There's no money there to pay for them. What do you think the chances are collecting on your pension, folks, in Puerto Rico? And they are slim and none. That's a total of $123 billion in debt. For context, the city of Detroit failed to pay its massive debt in 2013. When it became due, the city's restructuring totaled $18 billion. Detroit is a disaster for $18 billion. Puerto Rico is in the hole for $123 billion. And it's, on the one hand, you can say the good thing about it is the debt will not all come due right now because $49 billion is in terms of unfunded pension obligations, and some of these people will not be old enough to collect their pensions for another year or 5 years or 10 years. The obligation's there, it's unfunded, but it's not all going to hit at one time. So, but on the bad side, this problem is going to linger. They're not going to get this resolved, or they're almost certainly not going to get this resolved in a way where 6 months from now, a year from now, somebody say, okay, we filed for bankruptcy, the debt is canceled, now we can rebuild. It might be 4 or 5 years before they even figure out what they're going to do on this. And in the meantime, this debt is simply going to linger on, the bankruptcy is going to persist. Last year, Puerto Rican leaders went to Congress hat in hand asking for a bailout. Congress declined. Imagine that. What does that tell us about Congress? What does it tell us about the government of the United States? Aren't they the people who usually hand out money to anybody who walks in and promises to vote for them? They declined. And they declined to help the territory of Puerto Rico, a U.S. territory. Now, does that mean they just don't like Puerto Ricans? And this is last year, all right, when the Republicans were not clearly in control. This isn't just a Republican phenomenon. This is the Democrats, too, in the United States Congress. They declined to help Puerto Rico. However, Congress created the Puerto Rico Oversight, Management, and Economic Stability Act, called PROMESA. Well, what a wonderful thing that is. PROMESA sounds like a promise to me, Melody.
Yes, it does.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And aimed at compelling the island commonwealth to solve its own self-inflicted fiscal mess. So you go to Congress looking for money, and they give you a bill instead that tells you you're on your own. Historically, states and territories cannot file for bankruptcy. However, PROMESA allowed Puerto Rico to file for a Title III bankruptcy and leverage cuts on Wall Street firms and other investors. I don't know what they mean by leverage cuts, absolutely, but I believe they mean they're talking about reducing the restructuring the debt that's owed to Wall Street firms and other investors. And I think that's what they're saying, but I don't know for a fact what leverage cuts means. In other words, Congress enabled the Puerto Rican government to change the rules mid-crisis. I borrow money from some people. I promise to pay them $100,000. I borrow $100,000. I promise to pay $100,000 plus interest. But if I go broke, I can talk to Congress and cut a special deal, or I can tell my creditors, sorry, you're going to have to accept $50,000 or $20,000 rather than the $100,000 I owe you. I can change the rules mid-crisis. There is a section of the Constitution that says Congress can't do anything to change contracts. And I'm going to guess that the debt that's owed to these Wall Street firms and other investors may be of a contractual nature. And I wonder what the constitutionality is of Congress enabling the Puerto Rican government to change the rules, meaning change the terms of the contract, after the contract's already been negotiated and signed, and now it's time to pay off on the contract. And they're changing the rules. And they're changing the rules and maybe violating the Constitution. Maybe, I don't know, maybe. Maybe violating the Constitution. And that's easier than giving Puerto Rico a financial handout, a bailout. All of which just implies, at least, that Congress knows that the government of the United States is broke. Puerto Rico's in a lot of trouble, but we're not far behind. The recent omnibus spending bill allocated the Puerto Rican government $295 million in taxpayer money to cover the first 6 months of 2018. They're in debt for over $100 billion. In fact, they're in debt for $123 billion. And apparently, I'm assuming it says the omnibus spending bill allocated the Puerto Rican government $295 million out of $123 billion. That is a quarter of a percent of what's owed. All right? Quarter of a percent of Puerto Rico's total debt. I mean, it doesn't say the recent omnibus spending bill. It doesn't say that this omnibus spending bill was passed by Congress of the United States, or if it was passed by the Puerto Rican legislature. I think it was passed by Congress, but they gave him a whopping $295 million. I mean, probably there's a good chance that I could go to the government and say, hey, can you help me out? And maybe I could get $295 million. I don't know that the government even normally bothers to hand out such small sums. But it's basically an insult to Puerto Rico. A quarter of a percent of the debt is nothing. What happened in Puerto Rico is what happens when leaders make and defend poor policy decisions for decades. Eventually, you have to pay the tab for unchecked borrowing and spending. In addition, the bloated government workforce has become a disaster for the economy of Puerto Rico, and investors are left holding the bag. We have our total government population workforce in this country is, in my opinion, bloated. Right? Not so much at the federal level. They've cut back to some degree, but state. Right? Big feds cut back and the state increased. At least that was true a few years ago. It's just more evidence that the Puerto Rican people are being faced with the horror of all horrors. And that's called reality. You don't get something for nothing. You can't just legislate prosperity. All right? You can't just say, oh, you're working for the government. Well, we're going to make you, we're going to pay you as if you, you know, you're a bank robber or something. We'll just take the money from the idiot taxpayers and we'll give it to the government employees. And then your government employees, of course, will be expected to vote to support the government and the politicians and whatever. They did everything wrong that could be done. They wound up with an incredible debt for their size and population, and now it's going to strangle them. And it's not going to be over. It's like we've said in the past. You got to recognize that every time you go into debt, you borrow $100,000 now to make life a little better. Now, it necessarily means life will be a little worse when it comes time to pay the $100,000. We've guaranteed that we're going to have some bad years simply by running up that enormous debt. It's going to happen. There's no other way around it. It's not gloom and doom. It's reality. All right? It's logic. It's truth. It's justice. So on that note, we'll have to bid you adieu for the week. Melody and I are out of here. We'll be back on Monday. We hope you tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.